All right, welcome back to Seeking Scale. Andy, how's it going this week?
It's going well. How are things on your end, Craig?
Good, good. Yeah, lots of change in the winds. I think we'll talk about that a bit. But yeah, I mean, we're recording this right here at the end of February, and it's been a really good month for us. It's probably going to be our biggest growth month ever.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, really, and it's a short month. So yeah, feels really good that those things are all ticking so far, you know, even with a bunch of other uncertainty and stuff going on that we can talk about later.
What do you attribute that to? Because I would have guessed podcasting is obviously different than like a gym membership, but I still think it's aspirational in some sense. So I could see like the New Year's resolution bump, but I wouldn't have expected like a February bump. So like, were there new initiatives? What do you attribute this to?
The one good thing is like our new trial count has been going up like 10%+ a month for the last 3 or 4 months. And so just like that's been snowballing. I think the big thing is churn, frankly, is like we've had a couple of customers that are on like our legacy Podcast Motor subscriptions, which are like hundreds of dollars a month.
Mm-hmm.
In the last few months, a couple of them have churned a month. And so that's, you know, $1,000 of churn,
right?
You know, even though it's two customers. And so that's just like really held us back a lot in the last few months. But like we've been adding about the same amount of like top line MRR for the last 3 or 4 months, but this is the first month we haven't really had any of them churn. And so it's just, we're able to keep, you know, most all of it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Is that almost just like happenstance, or like, have you been working to deliberately cut the churn down?
Yeah, we've definitely been working a lot on delivering the service better, better expectations, better communication. I mean, that's in a service, that's a lot of it. It's like managing the expectation, the communications with the customers, so they know what they're going to get when they're going to get it. And our team knows, you know, what's on our plate. So yeah, we've been working pretty hard to keep optimizing that, especially at the beginning, you know, like when somebody gets onboarded, they get information now, like we're gonna be building it into the app. So like they're onboarded through like a wizard and stuff like that, because yeah, I mean, you go sign up for a service and like you need to know what the deal is. It's not like software where, okay, you click this button and you add this thing and, you know, it all does it. You're like shooting this stuff off into the ether and you don't know what's going on. So, you know, objectively, like we've done a not so great job of that in the past, and now kind of tweaking a lot of it just in communication, but also like in the product itself to get people started more quickly, more successfully. Because the service is really like really powerful for the right person. Like it just, you know, like for this show, we record this and then I stick it into the app and they just go do it and they publish it and it's all done. Like I spend zero time on it after we record. It's a really nice thing.
Yeah, because that's actually been, it is going forward, it's going to be a major focus of us, is reducing churn. And it's something that I've always put off or kind of waved away as being a product of our industry. And I do think it is. I think there are like, we are never going to be a single digit churn company, in my opinion. I just, with the market we're in, that's not possible, but there is still significant improvement we could make from where we are. And yeah, as I've really just started thinking more about our growth plan outside of the product, and as I'm getting a bit more bandwidth and can focus on those things, it's like, where do I focus my efforts? And I just feel like, yeah, we have a bit of a leaky bucket right now, where it's the two main parts are trial to paid and then just keeping them once they become a paid customer. And so it's really the last couple of weeks I've been putting a lot of thought into just the strategy from here. And it's just pretty clear to me, before we even think about more aggressive marketing strategies, that we've got to tighten things up with what we've got. And so it's like, yeah, keep working on SEO, keep having the word of mouth engine churning. But before we look into paid or anything else, I think we just need a lot of work there.
I mean, when we think about churn or like activation and value for customers, like they're all kind of related, you know, there are some proactive things that we can do and that you could do. And then there are some like reactive things. And like the proactive things are like product and success, and the reactive things are like support. And we always say, like, when somebody has to email in support, like, we've already failed, you know, like it's already to some extent, like too late. The customer's already got this this kind of image of us and our product that's slightly less than ideal. But probably like you, there's just a fair amount of like knowledge that customers need to be successful. Like you can't just, it's not a note-taking app where you just come in and start writing stuff. It's like, you need to know, you know, you need a microphone and what's an RSS feed. And all, and for you, it's probably like, how do you set up your daily fantasy sports stuff? And like, I don't know, are you guys thinking about like the proactive and the reactive sides of that?
Yeah, where we've done well, but it's also held us back in other ways is the reactive side is we've always overinvested in support. I mean, I was the main one on support until this summer. It's been less than a little over 6 months since I've like gotten out of the inbox for the most part. And even then, it's like we now have two people manning the support box part-time both, but they have pretty good overlaps that they cover a good amount of time and the responses are fast and all that. But like they are power users of our product and they play daily fantasy sports themselves every day and they're profitable players and they're thoughtful people. So like they have a lot of insight into not just how the product works, but like why you should do different things. And we get a lot of questions that are just a standard cancellations, refunds, change of whatever else, like the standard support things. But we get a lot that are strategic questions. It's like, what should I, how should I be using these settings? Like why, what adjustments should I make in these situations and this and that? And I think that's helped us a lot is that we'll answer those and give them like genuinely insightful answers. And I think a lot of people stick with us because of that, but it's hard to scale that. And I'm also starting to realize that what you're saying is that like, if they have to ask those questions, how many people who sign up for the trial have those questions in the back of their mind, have too many doubts, and then just leave and don't even think to ask support about that?
There's a bunch of that, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's why, yeah, as I've gone back and forth on what this last sort of hire is to kind of fill out the team for the time being, I mean, I've thought about marketing, I've thought about another support person, but I've realized it should be someone in a traditional like success role. We'll call them a coach, but it really will just be customer success where we'll be focused on how can we help our trialers and customers get more value from our tools and get better results in daily fantasy sports. We'll see what this process looks like. And I have to wrap my head a bit more around how to separate them from support and draw some distinctions there. But that's kind of the piece I was missing for a long time is I was just saying like, oh no, like our support's great. Like we're answering all these questions, but I wasn't thinking about how many questions aren't getting asked and how is that impacting all of our other metrics.
So since Matt Medeiros joined our team almost a year ago now, I think like eight, 10 months ago. And that's his job is success. And we have done two things that I think are really interesting on a success perspective and one thing on a support perspective that's really new. But on the success front, the first thing that Matt wanted to do when he got in was to create the Castos Academy, right? And so like academy.castos.com is a boatload of information about everything podcasting. It's all entirely free. And we could charge hundreds of dollars for it, like, you know, some, you know, internet marketers do for how to podcast. But for us, it's a success tool. I'm sure you guys are thinking about like, okay, we're going to record these 5-minute, you know, videos or something like that, put them in a place that's accessible, but also that like people have to like register for so that you can tag them in drip and send them emails that like they're down the success path. Like that was important to us. That they're not just totally publicly available, but like people have to kind of raise their hand and say, I want in this thing. So they're super engaged.
How do you balance that with like just even SEO considerations?
It's all on YouTube also.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So these things are still showing up, but if they want to go through the academy, they'll enroll and then you and your team can automatically or whatever reach out to them because you know what they're consuming.
Yep. And the other thing that's really related, and I just got off it before this call, is we have a weekly just open webinar. Mm-hmm. We use just Zoom. People go and register, and it's every week at noon on Thursday. And just come and ask us anything you want about, you know, technical stuff, how to set it up, or like success stuff. Like, hey, one of the questions today was, how do I ask for money for advertisers, you know, from sponsors? Like, this person never sold anything, is really timid about it. And of course, Matt and I both have sales backgrounds. Like, I just fucking ask for the money. Like, that's what you got to do. But it's been really interesting. And it's been a pretty even mix of the two, because yeah, I think you're right. Like, the line between success and support can be blurry sometimes, you know, like, hey, I have this thing I want to achieve, which is like strategy and success. How do I do it with your tool? And that's almost like support.
Do you train the support team on what's in the, like, do they reference the academy regularly? Do they point people to the webinar?
Yeah. I mean, as you're asking this, I'm shaking my head saying you were really smart to hire somebody that knows your product and the industry super well, because I think, like, from a support perspective, it's the place we have like a big opportunity to improve. Is like, I almost want to say, like, everyone that joins our company from now on needs to be a podcaster, you know? You don't have to be, but like, it just makes all these other things so much easier. If you know what somebody goes through and you know how they use the tool, it just makes it a lot easier. So some, you know, like, some, there is a lot of knowledge in our support team about, you know, the tool and how people use it and stuff, but not as much as like a success person would have, I guess.
I think that's where both of us, we have an upper hand, is that our markets are, there is a B2B element, but a lot of it is kind of prosumer. So it's possible, like a Groove, I think it would have been outside, if I was hiring for something like outside of customer support, I'm sure like we could hire from our customers. We basically poach their support people. Like, so like, that's not good. But like, it's probably, we couldn't reach out to our customers really about hiring a marketer. But that's where like the Groove blog kind of built that audience, which attracted me to that opportunity and other people to the team as well. But in our markets, it's not like the vast majority of my customers are professional gamblers. It's like the majority of yours are professional podcasters. So there is potential to just reach out to them and find people who are interested in the space, familiar with your brand, and looking for a part-time gig, maybe a full-time gig, like whatever it may be. So I just kind of stumbled upon that, and it's worked very well. And I think I'm just going to hammer that as long as I can, is just try to hire from that pool, because it does just make everything way easier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Even if you think about like bringing on this new person, the ramp up and the onboarding process is so much faster. Even if they just know the space, but they don't know your tool, even if they're not your customer, but they're, you know, a professional gambler, like they just know all of that stuff already. And you just have to teach them, you know, how to translate that into what your tool does.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's where, as I'm looking at making this hire, this is what I'm going to take a bit of time on. I'm going to go to customers first. And then from there, I'll extend it to our full email list. But I think I wouldn't look at someone who's not familiar with the industry. And I want someone who's familiar with the industry and our product, but they have to at least be familiar with the industry, especially for this position. But I mean, honestly, yeah, for our support hires, these are part-time things. They're both putting in like 20 to 30 hours a week. So still a good chunk of time, but they were on their own responding to emails within the first month. Like it was like 3 weeks in, they were writing like very good replies. It was like, first week was them shadowing me as I was going through the inbox, asking questions, things like that. Next week, they would write drafts and I would review them and then send it. Then basically third week, like, no, you're good. And like, there's still like questions that would come up that they weren't familiar with and things like that. But like when they have that familiarity already, it's like a cheat code. It just makes everything so much easier.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like at our stage, it's obvious how important onboarding is, especially when when you have to train on so much context. You either have to find the right person who's very self-motivated and they're going to jump in with both feet to learn your space. And they already are are like relatively senior on what they're actually doing for their job. So they're not trying to learn everything at once, or I just don't know how you do it. Yeah.
I mean, I think the answer there is if you don't bring someone in with domain knowledge, it just takes so long, you know, and they might not be as passionate about the space in the long run, you know? So I think that makes a big difference.
Because when we made our first engineering hire, non-contract engineering hire, it didn't work out for us. And we weren't as clear about like who specifically we needed, what kind of role it would be. And it was a very good engineer that we hired, but he was just much better suited to larger organizations with more process involved. And we didn't have that. And so it was trying to get him used to a startup environment as well as understand our space.
Yeah.
And right. If you can't wrap your head around like what all this data is doing, it just doesn't work out. And so that taught me just how much easier it is when you can have people with at least some context who also are comfortable being thrown into an environment where they're figuring shit out every day. Like, it's like, no, we do not have all the answers. And like, I won't always be able to get back to you right away. And like, you're going to have to just like kind of figure it out sometimes.
Yeah. That is definitely like an interview question. It's like, this is a zoo sometimes. Like, is that okay? have you done this kind of thing before? And I mean, we pretty much are only hiring people that have worked in startups and small teams before. Cause yeah, those people from big companies, they just want different things that we're not able to give them.
For us, it's, this wasn't the reason why we built the community. And like, we have a strong brand. I feel like we have our customers are very active in the community. And I think we have a lot of loyalty around that. And that's made all of this so much easier. But it makes me realize that when people say, as a CEO of like a growing company, your job is recruiting and hiring above a lot of other responsibilities. And it's like, I see why so many of the funded companies are always working on press, always like they have developer evangelists, they have all these things, because when you have someone who's not just looking for a job, but they want to work with you, that makes everything else easier. Even if they don't know the space as well, if they don't know those other things, if they are passionate about something, whether it's working with you, whether it's the industry, whatever it may be, that can just pave over so many other speed bumps.
So we just are hiring a new developer and made an offer, accepted, all good, you know, super excited about working with this guy. And then he emails me about a week later and is like, hey, can we like hop on the phone? You know, just have a few questions for you. And I'm like, oh shit, here it comes. Like, oh, I've gotten another one. And it was about an hour of him asking questions about, you know, how do we communicate, company culture, what's important to us, you know, speed versus quality from a code perspective. And I was like amazed, right? I was like shocked in a very good way. I was like, I think the tables have turned a lot with COVID. Like, we've talked, I think, about like the advantage that we have as a remote company is gone, right? Because everybody's remote. But I think even more so, just as like software is eating the world, like developers hold the upper hand in a lot of ways now. And just everybody, because like the playing field is so level with everyone being remote, that like candidates and employees are able to demand a lot out of companies that maybe previously they weren't able to. And like this, you know, our new developer asking me all these like really cool questions, you know, first of all, I was like, fuck, we have failed if this is not on the website and if we're not talking about this somewhere, you know? But I was able to talk to it in a really authentic, cool way. And he was really happy with what I had to say. And that was cool. But it definitely made me say like, this like culture and brand identity, not just for your customers, but for the people that you want to hire is like super important. This is the first time I've really, really seen that.
It must have also been reassuring too, in a way of, on one hand, you want better answers and more thought into how you're applying to the questions he's asking and to be deliberate about that. But just on the specific hire, that you're getting someone who cares to even ask this.
Totally.
Like, that's like, All right, this is a great sign.
Yeah. Because the flip side of that is like, we always ask like, why do you want to join Castos? Why are you applying for this job? And a lot of people just say, I need a job, or it's remote. And like that's not either. So like, we need to show up with a good reason for you to have a good response to that question, you know, which is like, we're a cool place to work and we're doing interesting things and the podcasting space is cool. And then they need to show up with something that's not, I just want a job. So, yeah.
Do you think at all about recruiting, about being more active on that? I feel like at the scale we're both at, it's not necessary by any means when we're just making a few hires here and there. But we both have ambitions of growing beyond that. And like, if it's 10 hires in a year, that gets a little different than 2 to 3. And if it goes up from there, then it's okay, how do we actually build a pipeline of the right kind of people?
I definitely, like, we're not hiring 10 people this year, but we may be hiring more people than like I comfortably can, you know? And so like, just from a process and onboarding perspective, like, we've done a lot. Like, we're reusing job postings and like the whole process and test projects for developers, like all that is done. We're not recreating the wheel there. But yeah, I think especially with developers, like for, cause we're hiring another one now too. Like, I am reaching out to developers in like, especially the WordPress community and saying like, hey, I saw your contribution to this thing. You know, we're looking to bring somebody on board. Are you interested in talking? And in a way, that's almost easier because I just, you know, troll around, you know, WordPress.org and some stuff like that for a couple hours and find like 20 people that are contributing interesting things. And that, the, like, that's a good list of 20 people, and then fire off an email and see where things go from there. And we've had a couple of interesting conversations already from that. So yeah, I do think that like proactive thing is definitely a thing.
I'm not there yet, but it's something that's in the back of my mind just because I don't think we'll have an endless pool of the right people at the right time for roles that we might need in the future. But it's like, yeah, to get to that spot, that's when it's, yeah, you're becoming more and more of a, like a real CEO where it's, you got to get a lot of the other shit off your plate before you can get there, I think.
Yeah. I think especially as you look to hire like really senior people, like they all have jobs. So they're not going to just be trolling, we work remotely. So yeah, I think it's just you being out there. I mean, that's how we got Matt, right? Is Matt and I knew each other, you know, we posted the job, he reached out and was like, hey, you know, he was obviously employed before. So I mean, we just got very lucky there, but I think it's a good model to try to replicate.
Do you want to talk at all about the reason why you had this job offer out to a new developer?
Sure. Yeah. So I this will probably be something that we talk about over a few episodes maybe, but yeah, our lead developer, Jonathan, is leaving the company here in a few days. Frankly, I think he would tell you he just doesn't want to be a developer anymore. He's been doing it for like 15 years and is, you know, I think in his like mid-40s or something. And yeah, just doesn't want to code, doesn't want to be responsible for code and deadlines and things like that. And is very unfortunately leaving Castos to go work for another WordPress company to be kind of a developer advocate. So kind of like we're talking about. He's actually going to do success basically for a WordPress product company. It's a big deal to lose, you know, our first developer and someone who's been here since the beginning. And so, yeah, scrambling to try to fill those shoes. I mean, it's impossible to fill those shoes with one person, which is why we're hiring two people. And they'll have different focuses and different strengths, hopefully. Yeah, that's the basis of it.
How do you navigate? Because like the first thing is just, I would be thinking of is right now, it's like if Matt left SaberSim, we'd be in a really tough spot. That's why it's great that he is still an owner. It's great that he has an employment contract with us. And like we have kind of those bases covered in most cases, but like there's still like those parts of the code that it's really only, he's the only one that like has full oversight. So a lot of what we've been working on is to get more redundancy in there, just in other people being familiar with the code, but also cleaning it up. So if something did happen, if he did leave, if whatever, people could figure out what was going on. So like, where do you feel the Castos code base is right now? Is it at a place where your current team has enough oversight where it's like, all right, like they can make do, or are there some spots you're not sure about? Like, how are you feeling about that side of it?
Yeah. I mean, so currently we're 4 full-time developers, including Jonathan, and 1 part-time kind of designer front-end developer. And fortunately at this point, everybody has touched kind of every part of the code, you know, the web app and the plugin. How senior and how experienced and comfortable they are with those things is a question. And I think that's what we'll see, you know, here in the next, you know, few months. We have all been really kind of open and intentional about, you know, the bus scenario, right? Like, what if I get hit by a bus tomorrow? And I mean, we have a developer wiki that is 100 pages probably. So like they have spent, and most of it is driven by Jonathan, because he has known for a long time that he has all of this knowledge in his head. And him and I talking more, you know, after he trying to drop the bomb on us, he's like, I just have been burnt out for a while. And so I think that he has known in the back of his mind that like he's not going to do this forever, and has been really good about being really intentional about, hey, I'm the only one that's done this, offload this next project where we're going to refactor this thing to another developer. I need to document how we do this thing. I need to document how, you know, how to get the app, you know, running on your local machine when you're a new developer. Like all of that stuff is documented. I mean, I say that like a little optimistically, you know, that like it's not all just going to be a total disaster. But I mean, even talking to the other developers in the last couple of weeks, like they're pretty comfortable with, you know, doing this without. I mean, it's not like he's, you know, going away to Mars or something like that. Like he'll be available to, you know, to consult with us maybe a few hours a week for the first month or so to kind of tie up those loose ends. I think it's always, you can look at it like, you know, the sky's falling, this is the end of the world, or like we're trying to, you can say, okay, we have to obviously fix this and figure out how to work with this. And this is an opportunity to objectively look at how we work and our team kind of makeup, and say like, what are the good things about this and how we worked? And then what are the things that if we had a magic wand and could start from scratch, like we are kind of, we would do things a little differently, you know? And so we're trying, you know, like really, really, really specifically to us, but maybe like helpful. It is like, we're looking at like how we scope features at the beginning. And then in the end, how we do like QA to be less dependent on like a person. You know, and I think that like that's the trap that we fall into as like entrepreneurs and small businesses. Like we hired these totally awesome people to quote just do everything, you know, and now we're kind of saying like, when we scope a new feature, what can we do to make it more kind of agnostic to the people working on it, to where like the feature is really well scoped, anyone can go work on it, and then in the end, if the feature is that well scoped, you know, we're going to hire a QA person that can test the, you know, the thing that we want to release against the scope document. So that's just like a specific example of like, we know we just can't have anybody as senior as him. And so we have to be a little more structured. And I think that talking to the rest of the team and even like myself, like it, that structure is a big relief, you know, because then it's not all on me, you know, or it's not all on, you know, Jonathan or Alec, you know, who's going to be our new lead developer. It's not all on them. It's on, you know, the process, and everybody's responsible for fulfilling kind of their end of that.
Who is driving the development bus right now? Or like once Jonathan's fully out?
So we do have another pretty senior developer. Okay. His name's Alec. He's in New York, and he'll be the one to make like all those big tech decisions. Okay. And, you know, infrastructure and things like that. He'll be, you know, when we go to scope a new feature, we have kind of the leaders of each kind of group of the company, and he's representing the development group. So yeah, and he's been with us for about 6 months, which is, I wish it was longer, but he's very capable. He's been a lead developer before. And yeah, he's just got to grow into it. And he knows that, and we've talked about it. So it'll be an adjustment for sure. But I feel pretty comfortable with him growing into that role.
For the two developers you're hiring, what kind of roles will they be, and like how senior are they? What kind of stuff will they be working on? Are they really trying to be like direct replacements, or is it just filling in other gaps?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to hire as senior as we can. And the cool thing is like we can hire anywhere, right? So like the developer that we're hiring is in Lagos, Nigeria, and is insanely smart and like, it has a ton of experience, maybe more than the guy who's going to be our senior developer, our lead developer. But he's obviously just new, so like he can't be lead developer as a new hire. But like you know the kind of person, like you talk to them and you start describing something and they know exactly what you're talking about and they know kind of what you're going to say and how to solve it. So like super fortunate to have that level of experience. And I think the other person that we hire will be similar. But I mean, you know, we're looking at developers in Croatia and you know, places that frankly, we can just like pay them a really, really, really good salary for where they live, but it's still, you know, 2/3 maybe of what a developer would be, not in the US even, but like in France or in the UK or in Canada or something. And then, you know, it's less than half what it would be in the US.
How do you balance the time zones, especially on a newer hire? Like, how do you make that work?
We kind of have buckets, you know? Alec, the guy in New York, is kind of on an island, unfortunately, and that he's the only one kind of over there because the rest of the guys are over here, you know, Eastern Europe or Africa. And I like that because we're able to, and we're going to start working in teams more, like two developers working on a feature at the same time. So it'll be like a more senior or, you know, tenured person at the company with a newer guy. And so like in an ideal world, we would have kind of two buckets, you know, like the kind of Europe, Africa bucket, and we would have the like North American bucket or, you know, the Americas bucket. So like totally ideally, I would love to hire a developer in like South America to work with Alec on the same time zones, but you know, he would be new, he or she would be new, but you know, hopefully experienced enough to know, you know, paired programming and pull requests and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, it works out pretty well. I think either that or you just say everybody needs to be over here, which may be, you know, aside from Alec, you know, because he's already here and he's great and he's in New York and he's not moving. I think we have the advantage, I guess, of living here to hire folks in like Eastern Europe. They're amazing developers. You know, Ukraine, Serbia, Poland are really, really, really good developers. And again, like we can pay them a lot for where they live and it's a really good deal for us. So it's like a win-win thing. And like doesn't screw with our time zones too much because for me, it's the same time zone.
Yeah, this is where I've just tried to play the game more on easy mode, but it's also like by messing it up before and just not being prepared for it. It's like we had hired a contract developer, but it was a full-time position in Russia. And with the state of the code, it was just really hard to get them up to speed because there were a lot of things they couldn't figure out. And it was like 10 hours off from Matt. And so it was just the amount of lag time in between that just wasn't workable. And so we've just kind of said, yeah, we'll be working in the Americas for time zones just so that the feedback loop can be much tighter. But I know it's obviously doable wider than that, but it's just not.
It's a lot harder. I mean, yeah, it's a lot harder. Yeah. It's the speed, you know?
Yeah. And that's where it's especially in those early days. And then like you can go a day really without hearing anything. And then it's just, yeah, it can get messy. And so that we brought on a front end developer, a senior front end developer who's in Brazil. And he's technically like I'm on the East Coast. He's a couple hours ahead of me. But he works like closer to almost like US central hours. Like he starts at like 10 a.m. his time. And so it works like pretty well. And we'll probably continue down that road as we expand the developers. But I guess like it's interesting to me where I've talked about the importance of having the domain expertise and familiarity. And like Eduardo doesn't have that. Like he's familiar with sports, but like not even all of the American sports, like he doesn't know that much about them. Do you feel like there are some roles where it just that matters less?
Yeah, like, I mean, to me, I think I'm closer you get to like customer facing, the more important it is. Yeah.
Except I feel like on the product side, I couldn't imagine someone, and I still don't understand how founders can start a business in an industry or vertical or whatever that they don't know themselves. I just think, especially how competitive things are, like you need to have a good product. And if you don't know how people are using it, good luck.
Yep.
But it's doable. But like, again, you're playing on hard mode there. But I feel like as long as you have a strong product person in there and on the technical side too, like if it's a separate person, like having someone at the top of the engineering org who gets what you're trying to do and can do the spec and make sure everything gets clear, it matters less. But have you found similar to that? Or
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think if you have people that know the domain, then they maybe can like be less experienced, I guess. But but if you have really experienced kind of leaders in place, then that kind of suffices, I guess. I'm not explaining that well, but yeah, I agree with what you're saying. And I think that like especially as like you get closer to the customer facing things, so like support, success, marketing, sales, people need to know this stuff, you know? Or like get to know it. But I think like a back-end developer, like, you know, the product person can scope it out and say exactly what they need to do. But again, kind of going back to culture, like I think people need to be excited about what they're doing.
Exactly, you know? Yeah, for sure.
I've talked to a bunch of people in the last few years that we've been hiring that say like, you know, I was building this like e-commerce for whatever, and it's just not my thing and I didn't really care. So I think it's like an intangible thing. If they're, you know, jazzed about what you're doing, it makes, you know, all the hard work we do easier.
Yeah. I mean, I think on the, it's not just COVID, but it's just that accelerated, but it's just the push to remote. It used to be, you could have your startup and you could just hire this massive team of VAs and overseas developers and just be, as long as you or someone was very like clear on specs and just like all the details, you could get a team to just ship in almost just like human robots and you wouldn't have to pay that much for it. And you could ultimately get what you wanted. And a lot of it was just because they didn't have as many other options. But as I never liked that route and I've worked with teams that were close to that, it sucks. But like you could have done it. And I just think as remote becomes more and more accepted and as developers become more and more demand and just anyone with skills and technology becomes more and more demand, like, it's going to be hard to just have those, like those companies that are like 30, 40, 50 K MRR with a team of like 30, 40 people. Like, I just don't think that's going to work anymore. And I think, you just got to pay a lot more attention about your brand, the culture and all those things.
Yeah, man. Well, this is a fun chat talking, strategically about kind of success and support and brand and hiring and all, it's all related, right? It's all one thing. So it's cool to chat through.
For sure. And if any listeners have any suggestions, if it sounds like I'm going down a horrible path, reach out and stop me. If you have any insight, anything that's worked for you or things that haven't worked, please reach out and let Craig and I know.
Awesome. Well, we'll chat soon.
All right. See ya.